Jim Forger, the Dean of the College of Music, and thank you for being here, Dean.
My great pleasure.
So as people are on campus driving around the circle, if they notice anything, they'll notice some relatively massive construction going on. So tell us about what's going on from a physical plant perspective in the College of Music these days.
Well, we've had the great opportunity to work over the last several years, 2 or 3 years, with probably a group of 18 faculty and staff to plan what will be about a 36,000 square foot addition, which will encroach a tiny bit on Adams Field, not too much of that for those that love to tailgate and assemble there in the fall, and about a 10,000 square foot renovation within our 1939 WPA music building, tried and true, but some updating it will be really welcomed.
So I'm reminded of some of the quaint neighborhoods in East Lansing where you you drive by the house and it's sort of this beautiful brick facade, but then you go inside and discover that the basement's very, very short, and the closets are very, very small, and the bathrooms are antiquated. And I kind of feel like that was our College of Music for many years. The beautiful brick facade with some of the sculpture and the artwork was very nice driving from Circle Drive, but fairly antiquated on the inside.
That is right. We have had a wonderful opportunity to address health and wellness for students, as well as a terrific new modern acoustical design. All of the spaces in the new Billman Pavilion, our lead donor is James Billman, and this was funded 50% by the university and 50% by private fundraising. It features the kinds of spaces that we don't have available to students. So, for instance, we have 4 very large rooms. One will be for the principal use of jazz, and it will also be a performance space and rehearsal space. We have a very large rehearsal room, which is twice the size of our current single rehearsal room, and it's pretty daunting to walk in there. It is really fabulous. We'll serve our orchestra and other ensembles. We have another large ensemble room for wind bands, and we have a large space for percussion, percussion practice. Percussion ensemble. And in the lower level, garden level, actually it's the basement, but it will have a lot of high ceilings. And the spaces that we currently have in the music building are 55 square feet for practice. Now that's the size of a small elevator. And if you're a pianist and you practice for 5 or 6 hours, you can experience permanent hearing damage. Or if you're a jazz combo in a small room or percussion. So this will really feature student learning in a comfortable, humidified, air-conditioned space, and it will Zoom student learning. Our percussion program is one of the best in the nation, and we're going to go from some of the worst facilities to some of the best. Same for jazz, one of the best programs in the nation, one of the best blues-based programs led by University Distinguished Professor Rodney Whitaker. We will go from one of the sketchiest kinds of facilities for their students' learning to one of the very best. So we're very proud about that, and we're so excited with this opportunity and for the support that the university and our private donors have provided.
So going from the college to talking about you a little bit, you're a saxophone player.
In my real life, I'm a saxophonist.
So how did you come to play the saxophone, to enjoy that, to ultimately make it your life's pursuit?
Well, it happened in fourth grade, actually, and I decided I wanted to play an instrument. And the true story is I went to the World Book under M for musical instruments, and I thought, gosh, those shiny instruments look great, but I like the instruments with the buttons. The saxophone was the perfect combination. Shiny brass, it had a great curve, and it had all of those keys. And, not a very scientific way to approach it, but it was something that I loved to do, and it hooked me.
I think, you know, that's very similar to what we see with a lot of our athletes. You know, sometimes they get into a sport at a young age for what can seem you know, not a really well thought out, or maybe for a fourth grader, it's extremely well thought out, you know, and it becomes a life's pursuit, you know, as your day job, you know, you're leading the school of music, you know, for your real job, you actually get to perform. What's it like kind of seeing things from both sides there?
Well, as I developed, I guess I would say as a performing musician, and maybe the same for athletes too, who is that person that makes the huge difference for you? What coach, what teacher, what particular individual? And I had an experience for me that was completely overwhelming, and the ability to interact with a single teacher that changed my life, and that was something that really captivated me. I think as an administrator, it's important to continue your discipline. And so I performed on campus a few weeks ago. I play in the Grand Teton Music Festival in the summertime. And as I'm becoming a little bit more advanced in my experience in my number of years, I have to get a longer running head start before I do that. But the perspective it gives you is the respect for what your colleagues do, the risk they take every time they get on the stage. And if you don't do that, you can say, oh, well, someone's just getting up and doing a concert. When you go through that, the preparation, the rehearsals, the nerves, the presentation, it really sharpens your perspective of what you're doing and why you're doing it. Of course, we do it to it is the faculty who are key. It is the faculty who are the university, as many say, and indeed in a college of music, mm-hmm. it is the faculty that attracts, recruits, retains, mentors the students. So my role is to work on behalf of the students, but surely on behalf of the faculty. And you don't have just a casual respect. You have a detailed and vital appreciation for what they do when you try to be almost as good as they are.
Now, in our College of Music, and maybe I'm a little biased given my relationship with the credit union and sitting on their board, but I think many people are very aware of our strong jazz program.
Yes,
and Rodney and his team of faculty do an incredible job not only of with their performances, but bringing in people from around the country, really around the world, into mid-Michigan and around our state to perform. In addition to the jazz program, what are the other areas of excellence in the college?
Well, if you look on the performance side, you look and see just terrific. We're focused on excellence in performance in classical music and in jazz. And so you'll see a piano area that has 75 graduate students performing at a very high level. Piano, strings, chamber music, woodwinds, brass. We, several years ago, were able to hire Justin Emmerich, who had been with the San Francisco Symphony and Canadian Brass. In the vocal arts area, which has moved forward, Mark Rucker gave his debut at Covent Garden in London last year. He sung with the Met. Jane Bunnell sang 10 weeks with the Met last year. Rick Fracker had been with the Met for 25 years. So it's the kind of people that perform at the top of their profession and also have the connections to help advance the careers of our students. So the performance side is certainly moving forward in a dramatic way. Composition as well, and we're expanding that into some media arts. Right now, Joe Tien, who is one of our, just got tenure as an associate professor. He's on a leave this semester, and he is the composer in residence with the Shanghai Symphony. And they've commissioned a new work for him that is going to be conducted by the conductor of the New York Philharmonic, who will repeat that performance with the New York Philharmonic. He has just been commissioned as part of this to write the required piece for the Isaac Stern International Violin Competition with a prize of $100,000. And wow, it will be the required piece that will be played by leading up-and-coming violinists from around the world. So that kind of profile is really out there. Music education is a real source of pride. All of our doctoral students have multiple offers. There's 100% employment. Undergraduates, there's 100% employment. We have terrific staff in musicology and music theory that are that have master's degrees and are preparing people for a scholarly track, but also in the world of pedagogy. And that is very important. I guess the final thing that I would say is we have a major initiative on entrepreneurial musicianship, which we call Running Start, your music business. What are the skills that students on the performance side need to have to put together a life in music? And it's not just staying in the practice room, but it's what are the business skills? What are the public relations skills? What are the networking skills? What internships can you get? What are the multiplicity of different kinds of skills to broaden your experience and your talents so that you can put together two or three or four different activities to make a meaningful life in music.
Jim, your comments remind me of a radio interview I heard a number of years ago with Billy Joel talking about the importance of understanding the business.
Yes.
And he talked about making a lot of money, losing a lot of money, making a lot more money, losing it all over again,
yeah.
And sort of in the span of a pretty extraordinary career, almost sort of three cycles of getting a little wiser every step down the road, but how valuable those tools are, and it's easy to I think it's easy to be passionate about your craft, but it's so critical to understand how the business aspects that allow you to do that. That if you can't if you can't be thoughtful about how you make a living, then it's probably a struggle to perform. So.
No, that's exactly right. And if you we start in the first year with a freshman seminar talking about what is your curriculum vitae going to look like in 4 years, in 5 years, in 6 years. Don't think about the lesson next week or the next semester. Think about the longer horizon. And for a long period of time, folks either went in the direction of music education or performance, composition. The world is changing and the skill set is changing. So, for instance, you can be a tremendous performer, but performers teach. And how can you put a life together and also enrich your community? So we have students learning to write grants, and they're doing things such as music and memory care. How can you customize programs for those with Alzheimer's? How can you write grants to serve that population? How can you do that through music therapy? How can you do that with our summer program working with, we have a summer residential camp, the only one in the country with bringing in talented folks with autism who are pianists. And actually, one of the young men happened after a camp to win America's Got Talent. He was the grand prize winner, Cody Lee. So we need to talk to you about that. We need to get him back for a week and then have him play at a basketball game halftime.
Absolutely, we need to work that out. That'd be wonderful. And in my time as athletic director, one of the things I have made a significant focus of our department is trying to figure out how to make those connections and be a resource to the larger university. So we will absolutely have to deliver on that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found interesting about music, and I found this interesting, and Jim, your spouse is the head of our piano department, and a person who I've gotten to be friends with through my former role as the secretary of the Board of Trustees, and I would often have conversations with Deborah about piano, and I just find it really really interesting, and she would literally travel the world recruiting students into our program.
In fact, tonight she's playing a concerto in Tashkent in Uzbekistan.
So exactly, and so are there, which causes me to ask, and I know that she spent a lot of time, for example, in South Korea.
Yes.
Are there pockets of the world where some instruments are more highly thought of, or where people, for whatever reason, culturally or socially, have become particularly adept at instruments, or are there pockets of the United States where people are just sort of tend to be better at certain instruments than others, or is that an absolutely ridiculous question?
No, not at all. Today in China, there are more piano lessons and taught and more piano sold than the rest of the world. Now, of course, it's a very large population. But in Taiwan, in Korea, in China, there are fabulous, fabulous string players and pianists. And unlike the saxophone, as wonderful an instrument as it is, you can start that a little bit later in life. But typically, if you're going to be an accomplished pianist, you need to start early at 3 or 4 or 5. Same thing with strings. And there is a sense of discipline and a sense of commitment in those Asian countries. And if you go to many of the conservatories, you'll find a large Asian population. It strikes me that there isn't that work ethic and the tenacity, and maybe that's society, freedom, many choices, communication, cell phones, those kinds of things that can provide a distraction. But no, it's a very good question. And Deborah is just one example. On her way to Tashkent, there's a stopover in Korea, and she has approximately 30 MSU doctoral graduates who teach in various universities in Korea. And they all gathered, and they had a MSU reunion at a hotel by the airport. They all came from various parts. And you could say the same with my colleague, Søren Bagratuni, cellist, who has a large class and many people that are there in Korea. As I reflect on our piano class, many of our doctoral students go back to their native countries, and with a doctoral degree from MSU, they're getting tenure stream positions throughout China. So it is a small world. It has been terrific to see pockets of really loyal MSU graduates in various parts of the world. And I know my colleague deans could say the same thing in different disciplines in Africa and in Asia and different parts, but it is a close-knit family. They are so very proud to be MSU graduates, and it binds them.
So going from sort of an international perspective back to right here in East Lansing on our campus, one of the responsibilities of the College of Music for the many years has been the Spartan Marching Band.
Indeed.
And an extraordinary asset to our athletic programs. They create a sense of energy, critical to the environment in so many of our sports. To me, it's interesting that the College of Music is responsible for the band, but probably many, if not most, of the members of the band aren't actually College of Music students.
Exactly right. As I like to say, it really, truly is an all-university ensemble, and each college has a component part. In looking at the membership, it really is a point of pride to see that is a high-performing ensemble that is one of those home bases for young people coming from around Michigan and around the country. And I think engineering, social science, natural science are maybe the three top, 15% or 16% of the membership. Music comes in at third. And it goes down to RCAH at 1%, nursing. So you can go through all the core colleges, and virtually every core college is represented there.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I was at the women's basketball game last night, and the band, component of the band was there, and And it really transforms the environment in a pretty special way.
Well, they are on a mission. They are proud of this university, and they believe that it is a privilege to represent the green and white at the various games and the like. And I'd have to say that the relationship with intercollegiate athletics and music is just terrific. You and your colleagues have been very supportive of the band, nurturing their progress, supporting them in many different ways, and that doesn't happen everywhere. So this also gives me an opportunity to say, hey, it's the 150th anniversary of University Bands. And so not too many weeks ago, we saw at Homecoming the MSU alumni band together with the marching band with 1,100 souls on the field, which was a real point of pride. And we'll conclude this year, the Saturday after the final day of classes, with the concert band, symphony band, wind symphony, bringing back past directors of bands, each having a commission, and sort of a celebration of 150 years. And then the Wind Symphony will be going on a tour to Italy and will be doing a concert in the hometown of Leonard Falcone, who was the director of bands at MSU for over 40 years. And his brother was the director of bands at the University of Michigan. So this is a banner year for MSU bands, and the pride of those alumni marching band members was evident on the field, I think, at the homecoming game.
Well, our music school, our College of Music, has just this pervasive presence on our campus, and one of my fond memories of my prior role working in the administration building was Wednesdays in the summer when I would come out at 5:30, 6, 6:30, whenever my day ended, and those Wednesday Caroline concerts were just a really nice sort of Wednesday hump day, middle of the week, really, really nice thing to hear. And occasionally is walking through campus, walking over to Grand River to grab some lunch, and occasionally one of the several folks that play the carillon would be on over their lunch hour playing something. And the College of Music wraps around us in such a way that sometimes we don't even realize it.
Well, you're kind to say that. I would build on that by saying we talked a little bit about sort of the professional side of the college, trying to be one of the best professional places of training and learning. But we have two other real dimensions. One is the devotion to general audience and student non-majors. So we have 2,000 non-majors in ensembles, in classes, and that's a very important, we view that as a really important role. And then the third is our outreach engagement mission, really tied to the land-grant mission through a number of faculty initiatives, but with two community music schools, one in East Lansing and one in Detroit. And we serve 5,000 individuals annually. On a weekly basis, probably, we serve 2,000. And in Detroit, we have one of the largest sequential music programs in the city. We serve a population, many of whom come from a family of four with an income of less than $22,000. Wow. And so our role there is to provide dollars. We raise about $550,000 a year to provide access. And in that setting, we use music, the power of music, to build human beings. It's not trying to create professional musicians. It's how can the power of music be applied to instill pride, discipline, collaboration, and all of the kinds of things that coaches do, right, in terms of building character, giving people a path forward, building success. So we're very proud of the work that we do with our partners in Detroit and with the Detroit Public Schools, and it's an important part of our mission.
As a person who spends the vast majority of your life in the world of music, is there a piece of music, a style of music that is that's your favorite, that sort of captures your heart in a unique way?
Wow. I would honestly have to say no, because as I listen to all of my colleagues, I've learned a lot about jazz from my colleague Rodney Whitaker and his friends. I have really gotten to love vocal music and opera through watching that program grow. Of course, you can't beat listening to a recital by the king of the woodwinds, the saxophone. There's just so much diversity among and styles of music, from rock to pop to jazz to blues to classical music. I really love it all. We just got a really extensive 220 instrument collection of early music instruments, which will be on display, and we're going to start a new music collegium and those kinds of trying to do early music, involve improvisation in that process. And this campus, in part thanks to you, you've been a big supporter, Bill, of trying to take one of the campus landmarks, which is one of the least utilized spaces, which is the MSU Alumni Memorial Chapel. And through collaboration with our good friends Vinnie Gore and Joel Heberlein, and you've been involved as well, we will be installing a $1 million organ. And so that will be a space for concerts. It will be a space for rehearsals. It will be a place that will be lively during the week. And so we look forward to the inaugural concert in early September with a world-class organ that will add to the many services, memorials, meetings, but then also concerts on this campus. So the chapel will come alive.
Well, and that's just a perfect way to end this segment of our program, and yet another example of sort of one of those not-so-obvious ways that that the College of Music really wraps its arms around our whole community. And I don't know that the college is a hidden gem, because we do, I think, a pretty good job of trying to be out there, but it certainly is one of the great gems in the crown of Michigan State University. And so it's always special, Jim, spending time with you, learning a little bit more about the college and what's going on. And we really appreciate you being with us here today.
Well, thank you so much. And as I like to say, with our partners in athletics, I like to say the musical arts and athletics are two wonderful windows to this university.
Absolutely.